So I choose to present some very specific works in experimental cinema, so I wanted to give you maybe background information. And first say that experimental cinema, of course, is more about doing filmic experiments that, rather than telling a story. And the filmic experiments is in fact question the technical and material nature of images and sounds. So the filmmakers are basically doing scientific, or rather here, artistic experiments about how images and sounds are formed, about their characteristics, their matter. So that's what interested me. And that is maybe why one of the most common form in experimental cinema is a self-reflexive film. And it is therefore not surprising that tool, that first-person films, form an important category in that, you know, experimental film. And alongside diaries, letters, or autobiographies, which involve the filmmaker's identity, we find in this corpus numerous films called self-portraits, in which the filmmaker's personality is definitely not the main subject. And in these self-portraits, we are not learning about something about the filmmaker's life, or where he comes from, what he has done, or what he's doing every day. It's not the filmmaker that is important, but his image, and more precisely the homemade image of himself. And the subjective is rather the film itself, and the filmmaker appears literally at work, i.e. experimenting with the medium and showing what he can do with images and sounds. In painting or photography, the self-portrait is an established genre. For a painter, the self-portrait could be a way of showing the artist's skills, like a business card, for example. It could also be a way to practice, a way to getting ready technically, or a way to explore all the medium's possibilities. And indeed, what is more practical and cheaper than taking oneself as a model to do so, and the artist is always available and free of charge, so it's really... Here in this session, we're going to watch different examples of films where the filmmaker took himself as a model in order to make some filmic experiments. And my hypothesis is that the so-called self-portrait sometimes just appears by chance and during the experiment. I'm here very interested in the interaction between the appearance of the self-portrait and the process of the film. So sometimes the self-portrait is not the project of the film. And I like to present the films we are going to watch and give you background information. So my first example is going to be a Super 8 film. I chose this one because I found interesting to experience here in a cinema the differences in the format, because we're going to talk about homemade films, so I found that a bit. And because we were talking as well about home movies, so just to see what it is to have a Super 8 projector in the cinema. And also because this film, Autoportrait by Cécile Fontaise, is one of her first film and a very rare self-portrait in her filmography. She's a French experimental filmmaker, and she teaches art full-time in a primary school. She recycles almost every material she uses in her film, and she sees filmmaking as a primarily plastic activity. In this film, it is when she started filming and manipulating films in the beginning of the 80s, she first tried a self-portrait to get used to her camera, to herself maybe as a filmmaker, and to the images of herself as well. And here, Cécile Fontaine plays with framing by filming herself in extreme close-ups as she holds the camera in her hands. And it's now a very familiar gesture with, you know, DV or mobile phone, of course. But I thought it was interesting to see that with the Super 8, the beginning of the 80s. And especially because, of course, she wouldn't have the chance to control and to watch and control what she was filming. She doesn't have the little screen that we use now. And she edited into the film some pictures of herself at various ages. And this could explore, of course, the question of the autobiographical aspects of the self-portrait, and as well could raise the question of the archives here, or the differences between the formats, and of course the differences between still and moving images in this type of self-portraits. The next two examples are going a bit further in the experiments. They are both about filmmakers who invented their own movie camera. The first one is called Stenopé Video, whose subtitle is Birth of an Image, was filmed by Jean-François Reverdy in 2003. Jean-François Reverdy is a French cameraman for TV and cinema now, and works as well on more personal objects, like Stenopé Video, which was his first work. The movie camera he invented has got no lens, but it is used as a kind of camera obscura. In fact, Stenopé is another word for camera obscura. It took two attempts by Reverdy to succeed. At first, he put a movie camera in a camera obscura and filmed, but the image was inverted and not really convincing. So he decided that the camera needed to become the body of the camera obscura itself. So to do so, he used a professional DV camera, because the compact camera we have, when the lens is embodied in the body of the camera, prevents from this kind of manipulation. So he took off the lens and very simply put a piece of peeled cardboard instead. And this time, the image was in the right way around, and because the image has been inverted by the camera itself. And with this tool, he has made various experiments, and you are going to see two of them, or two extracts of them. The first one is called Autoportrait au souffle, so breathless self-portrait, and the second one is Peart's self-portrait. The other two are called Birth of an Image and Discovery. And in the first experiment, Reverdy is in front of his camera. He has put a kind of very light paper to hide the hole in the cardboard. And when he blows, of course, the paper moves and we can see his face. Of course, the possible signification is very strong here, because without the breath of the artist, there is no image and therefore no self-portrait. In this case, the self-portrait is basically dependent of the presence or even the breath or the life of the artist, like, again, a performance in a sense. And his second experiment, Reverdy is in front of the camera again, and with a needle, he pierces the cardboard. One hole means one image. Then he pierces another hole, and two images of himself appear, then three, then four, and so on. And here as well, the suggested meaning is quite strong. Too many images mean the disappearance of the image, because they're too much light, of course, and the image disappears. Like if you see too much of me, you don't see me at all. You will see that the quality of the images that Reverdy obtained is very strange. And because there is no mirror to direct and focus the light, the image seems very fragile and appears to emerge from an intense black as well. And of course, the grain is very thick. And Reverdy had to push the DV to its maximum to obtain something. And that's why it appears a bit orange with lines across. Okay. And he's done different experiments with that camera now. He's currently carrying on experiments with that. The second example about the invention of a movie camera is 1990 film by Junichi Okuyama, called The Face and the Back at the Same Time. Okuyama is a very productive Japanese experimental filmmaker who started to work during the 60s. He's now doing some installations in various places, and has been always known for his playful approach to the medium of film. Here, for this film, he managed to create a movie camera with two lenses, both linked to the camera. He wanted to film two images at the same time in order to have that impossible image of the face and the back at the same time. You'll see the result. In fact, what we can piece here are two superimposed images of two related parts of the body. And it's an irregular superimposition of two different camera angles on the same piece of film. and the image jumps as if it can be seen what you film or what you show. The film we see starts with a portrait of the movie camera, like a movie star thing, see? And then we can see the superimposed images. We need to pay attention to the details here to perceive a clear image of his face, and his neck. And what I find very surprising is that during the experience, the self-portrait becomes more and more abstract. And finally, maybe you will see something else. For example, somebody told me, oh, it's like fingerprints. Or so the image, you know, then becomes something else. The other example I'm going to show you is a film by Dietmar Brehm. And it's really interesting as for me because the project there was a classical self-portrait. So the artist with his tool in front of a camera making a piece of work. But it didn't end up as planned. Dietmar Brehm is a German experimental filmmaker who started as well to work in the during the 60s. And he's currently working on video, which is called Praxis, which is still in progress. For his film called Camera in 1997, he said that he wanted to try to film himself with his movie camera in front of a mirror, just to see. He did so, but he decided to follow a self-imposed rule, to do exactly what the guidebook said not to do, just to experiment. This is exactly the kind of question experimental filmmakers could ask themselves, what if? Dietmar Brehm explained later that when the film came back from the laboratory, he thought that the movie camera was more beautiful than he was. At first, he wanted to destroy the film, but he thought he had failed in his self-portraits, but then decided to keep the film and to make a print. And the camera was, he realized, the real subject of the film. And there, the self-portrait goes from the face of the man to the self-reflection of the camera itself. It's almost an allegory, and maybe one of the filmmaker's dream, turning into a movie camera or something. The following example, the fifth example, is more about the cinema as an art of frames and movement. For his film, Autoportrait au dispositif, in 1981, Christian Lebras decided to make a portrait not only of himself, but also of the experiment he had worked on for several years. Christian Lebras is a well-known French experimental filmmaker and photographer. He especially made, among other pieces, a series of self-portraits in photography. And he has also founded Paris Experimental, a publishing company entirely devoted to publishing texts on avant-garde and experimental cinema. Lebras is interested in two main characteristics of the cinema, the frame and the movement of the film through the projector. In order to make the frame and the movement visible, he uses mobile frame masks that he puts in front of the camera. And in fact, it's a strip of cards with various size holes in it. And for Autoportrait dispositif, he placed himself and the camera in between two mirrors and printed the film four times, back and forth twice, using his strip. As a result, the images are superimposed and seem to float. The greenish color is because Lebras used an out-of-date film stock, again to see what the effect might be. Because he used two mirrors facing each other, the images are infinite, in fact. And because he has printed the film back and forth, all the films is reversible, left, right, beginning, end, top, bottom. And the film is, in fact, a mirror of itself. And Lebras even says that it's not necessary to rewind the film after the screening. You can then, you know, screen the film again like it was, because it could be other way. And finally, it's a double self-portrait of the filmmaker and of the technique he uses. Indeed, the film was made during the shooting of Au Long, another film of him, which explores the colors and their demarcation. And Autoportrait au dispositif could be seen at the film like behind the scenes of Au Long. And here the self-portrait of the filmmaker tends to be more self-reflexive than subjective, and the attention is all on the dispositif. But of course, again, it's the presence of the filmmaker that brings all the depth, you know, to the film. The last two examples are both about the properties of the celluloid and the material, the duration of its life and the variations of its appearance. The first one is Autoportrait Refilmé by Olivier Fouchard, filmed in 1998, where the filmmaker experiments with refilming from one format to another, in addition to manipulating the film itself. Olivier Fouchard has done lots and lots of self-representation films. Some of them are kind of video diary, which he calls autochronique, and where is very loquacious. And some are silent self-portraits, like this one, the one we're going to see. Here Fouchard filmed his face on black and white Super 8 film. Then he manipulated the film with chemicals. Then he transferred the film on 16mm and finally refilmed it on Super 8 before retransferring it onto 60mm, and we're going to see it on 16mm. The result is a kind of flickering of the images and a sort of disappearance of the self-portrait in the images, or through the images, maybe. What I find very beautiful and interesting is how he managed to make use film, the fragility of the film, and make it almost alive. You see, you tell me what you think. And Olivier Fouchard likes to intervene directly on the film stock, and he likes as well the random nature of the process. The self-portrait is clearly a pretext to shape the experiment with the material of the film. And this film is one of many about more or less the same manipulation. We could have presented Autoportrait or Number 5, Number 8, or Variation Colorée. There's more than one experiment about that. And the second example, or the last, but the second about that kind of experiments, is the film of Louise Bourque, Self-Portrait Postmortem, filmed in 2005. We are not going to able to show it in its original format, which is 38mm, but I thought it was worth including it in this session. Louise Bourque is a French-Canadian filmmaker. She lives and works in Boston, where she teaches films. And for her films, she normally used found footages, home movies, or films she has shot, and alters them with different and very unusual processes, including the direct manipulation of the film's photographic emulsion. For Self-Portrait Postmortem, she worked on the celluloid itself and its natural deterioration. She buried random footage from previous work in her backyard, and 5 years later, when she looked at the results, she found images of herself captured by chance that were semi-preserved. And she said herself, "The resulting film is an exquisite corpse with nature as collaborator. Like in all her films, the themes of memory and loss are predominant, but here what I find, again, very beautiful, is that the self-portrait appears by chance. It wasn't planned that way. Again, the possible meanings are multiple, strong, as the film is in a sense, resurrected from the dead, and the self-portrait with it. This could be seen as a literal example of the conventional idea that self-portrait is an attempt to immortalize the artist. The images we have are images of the deterioration of the celluloid, there is variation in color and the apparent disappearance of the filmmaker through her images, as she had created rhythmical patterns through the layering of sound and image. A comment about her work offers almost a perfect definition of the self-portrait, and I finish with that. She says, "In my work, I seek to elicit dark and private feelings in a way that can resonate with other people and move them without the anecdotal details specific to my circumstances." So I'm going to show you the films now. So I'm going to start with the Super 8. So the Super 8 is the first one. So it's Autoportrait by Cécile Fontaine.
As you said, I was completely convinced by the fact that in this film that are maybe sometimes obscure, but there is more the work of the filmmaker, so the filmmaker at work, because they have their own body, and is, as you said, is free of charge, so it's worth it, like, experimenting. And I was especially impressed by the Cécile Fontaine, the first we saw, especially about the fact that she's kind of playing with the camera without knowing what she's doing, and so fragmenting the body. Mm-hmm. Instead, the only image we see that is like more complete image of the self is the portrait, is the pictures.
The pictures.
So I was kind of, you know, if you want to say something more about the autobiographical aspect of this, I mean, like the camera is just fragmenting the body, whereas the picture is.
Yes, I think it's she's done that during the editing. So there's two parts maybe in this film that when she was trying camera and she was trying to, this was her first film or basically one of her first experiments, and then as well putting that together with images of herself. So it was the fragmentation of the body and as well, you know, images from when she was a kid. So it's a mixture of self-portrait and autobiography, you can say. But it happens then, it's another process. It was during the editing, I think. And the first process, it just, and in this film, we can see that very clearly, the two processes, maybe that filmed herself as, you know, as you say, that fragmented body, and she can see herself. Of course, we never do that. And then another part of the film, it was the autobiography.
Mm. And we only see ourselves like in pictures. So we see her body.
Yes, parts of the body and the only in pictures. Yeah, and pictures of the past as well.
Yes,
Thank you very much for showing this work to us. I mean, one of the things that is, is striking is the word narcissism, which we haven't quite used yet. And I think it's always, you know, it's of course is a dissection of oneself as well. It's not, you know, a complacent narcissism, but there is an element of that. But what I found really striking is the accent on the organic, which I thought was very, very strong in some, at least, or most of them. Both, you know, the matter, the bodily matter, but also the, you know, the matter of the film itself.
Yeah.
And that connection between the two, and I don't know whether you wanted to say.
Yes. That. Yeah. I think that's why I think these films are interesting in this way. It's on top of being the manipulation and being questioned about the materiality of the films or what is its cinema. It's more than image and sound. It's time. It's movement. It's frame. It's lots of different layers of that, and to play with one particular aspect of that, and as well, I think in the Fuchsia, it's really true, and the last one as well, of course, and because of the process as well. So it's like the self-portrait or the body of the filmmaker or the body of the person who does the film tends to become the celluloid, tends to become the support of the film. And I think it's really, you know, this part of the self-portrait, I find that interesting because, as you say, that a narcissistic, you know, maybe aspect of it, but we know nothing of them. We know nothing, and most of them are mute. You know, there's no voice in this case. So it's not, I'm going to talk about me. And for me, it was most that the body is here as a pretext, even as a pretext of just doing films like touching the material. And that is really, I think, and even nowadays, because now you've got all the experiments with digital, and to go back to that, or to go to that, I don't know, but just to put that in comparison, and especially with the Fontaine, for example, that's, you know, in the beginning of the 80s, there was this gesture to film herself like this, and the length, it's only the length of her arm. And it's now gesture, so, you know, everybody does that every day. So, and I like this, you know, this, the gap in time, and now what it becomes. So it's memory, story of the images as well. But it's true that the body is now the, in this case. And in the fuchsia, it seems to disappear. Or even sometimes it's just like if the images is like a heart beating or something. So yeah, I think that it's sometimes abstract as well. So it's not the self-portrait disappearing. We can't really see their faces. So maybe the narcissist's gesture is at first and then, you know, go back. So it's just the story of going back from and putting the film, the movie camera or the celluloid first.
Question, because what I find really interesting, especially about the Dietmar Brehm one, is that as I was watching the film, it felt that it was, you know, almost more a portrait of the camera than of the, and in fact the title is called Camera, it's not called Self-Portrait, so I wondered if you could say a bit more about this one, because...
I think he wanted to try his new camera. Just as simple as that. You want to just to try and be a part of that. I think it's just something like homemade gesture you make. You just purchase a new camera. You want to try all the possibilities of it. So that's how I see it. And it's true. It's the camera, and sometimes it disappears as well. You just leave the camera, and it's on in front of the mirror.
And it's in the bathroom.
Yes, and it's a bathroom in front of the mirror as well.
That's very interesting because in these self-portraits, I mean, the camera, so the technology is absolutely essential. I mean, everything here is about, you know, how you achieve the self-portraits, you know, so, and it's so interesting that in that particular one, a switch happens, you know, almost like so that the technology becomes even more, like, you know, it's like it's almost like a switch. You know,
during the process, yes. In fact, because he starts with himself, exactly. And during the process, it's more about the movie camera than himself or his image. And at the end, we are looking at the camera, not at him.
Because it's more than, I'm sorry for dominating, but it's more than, you know, I was thinking about that very strong tradition in painting of painters who paint themselves with the easel, with the paint, you know, the paintbrush. But this is more, like it's connected to that, but it's more than just a self-portrait with the object, you know, of your art. It's actually... it's very much in this one and the same, so they merge, you know.
And it's the game as well with the distance, because when he puts his fingers in front of the camera, it's like if it's just in front of us. That's something with the distance of the mirror as well from the camera, and it's quite surprising at first because you're looking at the camera and you forget that there's a mirror, and just suddenly you see that the little fingers going there say, oh yes, it's true, there's a mirror there. It's like if you were in front of that.
Also because with digital technologies, usually the camera just disappears and we just see the image of the subject. And here is so, I mean, relevant, it's the fact that the camera and the subject are together in the frame.
Mm. Nice.
Any
other
questions? Yeah?
Okay, so I have to be the last one then.
Thank you, Prunes. This was really beautiful. I love the extent for this last film. It looks a lot like fine portraits. I wanted to add that what I find interesting is that the authors are alone while they are making their films, and I like the haptic quality of it. So in a way, these are films, but they continue this painting tradition of artists being alone while creating. I wanted to ask whether you know how were these films originally shown? How were they originally presented to public?
The film, the one we saw in 16 millimeters. No, all
these films were there. Were they a part of artistic exhibition? Were they shown in galleries?
Yeah, they are part of the experimental, you know, world of cinema. So the light cones one, the 16 millimeters we saw, and the Super 8, in fact, it's they are distributed by this, you know, in French distributors like Lux here, Lightcon in Paris, or so they've got a catalogue of, you know, plenty of experimental films. So usually it's in cinema, yeah, in cinema. So you've got experimental session, experimental, you know, in it's more in cinema than in galleries, but maybe now it's changed. So we are changing that. So I think I was really happy to show that in the cinema today. And it's true that some of them, especially the Christian Lebrun, I've seen that, I think maybe twice with the in 60 millimeter. And then I saw, you know, with a DVD, and it's not the same at all. So I was very happy to see that with the original format.